welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. The day after Thanksgiving and Bush pardoned turkeys. Well, I wish he'd pardon himself and step out. Anyway, welcome to the land of creeping fascism. Tonight, my guest is Sean Morton. And Sean's an old friend of mine. He does the Art Bell Show almost every night, practically lately. I've heard him on there. And he does prophecies. He's got a great website. It's SeanDavidMorton.com, which has the Delphi Associates newsletter, which everybody in the world should be subscribing to. Sean predicts everything from the stock market changes, gold prices, to earthquakes, everything. And he's been monitored by Coast Radio for quite a while now, and most of his predictions are correct. And tonight we're going to do about 5 or 10 minutes on the have a little discussion on the quantum mechanics and primarily the entanglement part of the quantum theory. And then we're going to switch over to a whole bunch of stuff. Sean right now is up in Sedona, Arizona, with some Indian shamans, and that's a whole other story. We're going to cover that in about 10 minutes. So stay tuned. Here we go. Well, Sean, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Uncle Fred. Thank you so much for having me on your program. Congratulations on the fantastic success that your show has had. And if no one deserves it more than you, you are you have been a raging pioneer. Your constant and aggressive curiosity, I guess, has been has really been an inspiration to a lot of us. And you've just been a pioneer in so many different fields. Your books, Death of Ignorance and Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light, have been an inspiration to all of us. And for those of you that don't know, Dr. Fred Bell is one of the most brilliant men in the field of, my goodness, in the field of just about everything
stuff.
As far as
I
science
think
goes.
So that's a good word, right?
And now now pay me that $20, show me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm writing an article. So Sean needs it for his magazine, his thing for next week. And
My Delphi Associates newsletter.
Yeah, and that goes out all over the place, I know. Tell us a little bit about that, first of all, before...
Well, the Delphi Associates newsletter, the newsletter you have to have today because it tells you all about tomorrow. I started publishing the newsletter in, I believe it was March of 1993, and the primary reason I started publishing the newsletter was because I had come to some national prominence originally for predicting the San Francisco earthquake in 1989, the Landers quake in 1992, a whole series of earthquakes actually in California. And I had noticed that in 92, there had been a massive shift in the timeline, if you will, a complete jump, a skip in time-space, if you will. And after that, I began to notice that a lot of the prophecies and predictions of a lot of the people that were out there, the Nostradamus stuff, a lot of the Edgar Cayce stuff, a lot of even the Mayan stuff, that the disasters of the prophecies have been pulled down by a factor of 10, or we had jumped the timeline in some way, shape, or form that a lot of these prophecies and predictions weren't going to come true at all. So blazing along this kind of new timeline, I started publishing the Delphi Associates newsletter as an answer, if you will, to a lot of people that were talking about gloom and doom and all these horrible things were going to come down and that California was going to fall into the ocean and what have you. And so the Delphi Associates newsletter became a place for me to actually put in print my own predictions, my own intuitions about the future, allowed me to blue sky about future trends regarding economics and politics, allowed me to put a place where you could actually put in print where, places I predicted things. Also, it also gave me a forum for other people in the metaphysical community as well, because there wasn't really any place where people like, astrologers and astronomers, and, it was a very fledgling place back then, could have an opportunity to publish their articles. And so I called the Delphi Associates because I wanted a group of people whose interest was the future of mankind and people working for the enlightenment of all sentient beings. And that's pretty much how the newsletter came about. We've been I've been publishing the newsletter now for about 16 years, I suppose. We've got about 50,000 subscribers. And that's just in print, and then we've got however many, hundreds of thousands on the internet as well.
Yeah, no, you've built that up while traveling. And by the way, Sean also works with me. We go to New York. I haven't done it in a while, but he's in New York City. You'll be there in March, right?
Well, actually, you've not done it in a while. You were there in October, actually.
Yeah, I was there for the first time in 7 or 8, 10 years.
You had not been there for about 8 years or so, and you were a fantastic star. You had sold out. you were had sold out seminars, and everybody loves you, Fred. It's been a long time since you've been out there in the public eye, actually lecturing and speaking, and your expertise and grace are sorely missed.
Yeah, well, I like doing it, you know. Anyhow, before we get into the topic that you really want to talk about, I just want to give you an update to see if you understand this a little bit better.
Okay.
I've been trying, you know, explaining something that I know from a Pleiadian level and working through all the textbooks of these world-famous physicists
right.
has been a real challenge for me because I understand what I want to get across, but I don't know if I'm not getting it across in terrestrial terms.
Okay.
And it has to do with the projector. And
the RNA-DNA projector.
Yeah, and I think that we've come to a new level of understanding it. And I'm just going to give you a real quick idea of what I'm working on here. When we deal with a photon, first of all, I would define a photon. Well, first of all, there's dark matter and there's dark energy, okay? Dark energy is something that keeps the universe expanding and keeps the temperatures of the sun and that hydrogen atom on the sun at a certain point where it's not heating up or cooling down, because if it heated up, the stars would blow up, and if it would cool down, the universe would freeze over eventually, and this is called lambda and omega in physics. Dark matter is 72 to 72.5% of the universe, and that's where when I say energy follows thought, which you've heard me say,
yes.
Energy follows thought, meaning as soon as the thought is there, then matter starts to densify in it to give it drive. In other words, to make that thought go to another person's thought. So once the energy of the thought is there, another energy is pulled out of dark matter to make it happen. And this is done through what physics calls a particle called the boson.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah. And in the boson, in this process, it's the back door of consciousness, okay?
All right.
Science is trying to find out how to create a boson in the laboratory because this gives a proton mass, for example. But where does this mass come from? Well, it comes from dark matter. Okay, so then I've defined. I had a contact with the Andromedans the other night. Says I need some help, and so they gave me a little bit. It was real interesting because they said, look at a photon as a preceptor. Their term for it was a preceptor on grounding to dark matter. In other words, a photon is a way of grounding to dark matter. And so what I was able to deduce from that when a photon is present, which is energy from the astral plane and different planes, as it goes to dark matter, it lights consciousness up. Consciousness explodes into it. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah, and so this is what they kind of... It's going to be in my new book, but it's going to be in your article, too. So then the next thing we need to look at is before the Big Bang, just for the sake of an idea, a conversation. Before the Big Bang, we had nothing, an involute, a God's thought. The Tibetans call it the Manavantara period. And then suddenly God started thinking, just using that as a term, and the Big Bang started, and energy started, and all the particles were formed. Eventually, everything cooled off, matter was formed, and consciousness permeated, and we were here. So that's kind of like in 10 seconds.
Right.
So then we get down into quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics means very small, and quantum mechanics is telling us now, and this is what I used to say years ago, 23 years ago, that the electron, I used to say the electron doesn't go around a proton like we see it. It goes and stops and starts and goes and stops and starts and creating a rhythm. And then in the process of creating a rhythm, it becomes a wave. Well, quantum mechanics now, as the last 10 years, sees it that way and defines it as a wave. So if we were to take a piece of white cardboard and put two holes in it, an inch apart, and take a light source and put it 10 feet away, and just aim the light source into one hole, the light would appear to go momentarily into one hole. It would hit the back, whatever was on the other side of the hole, let's say a piece of white reflective paper. It would bounce back. And it would appear to be going through both holes simultaneously, which it actually is doing. And then, as the light is going through one hole that's actually splitting out and going through all of the holes, it starts to produce a wave front that comes back to you, the observer. And that's pretty much where quantum mechanics is now. The next thing that's happened now is that science is able to do this. You can go into you can have one generator, and it generates a light source, and this light source has the ability to just produce two photons, two beams of light, two grounding consciousness. These two photons basically cross each other's paths, and they become entangled in one another. And anything with the characteristic of this entanglement will happen anywhere in the universe. For a long time, Einstein tried to say that there would be a time difference, in other words, the speed of light, between this entanglement. So if I had two boxes, I have a detector box with two lights on it on one side of the room, and I've got a detector box on the other side of the room with a light and a green light, red and green light on it, and I have a entanglement, a light source in the middle. When I create a certain pattern on the entanglement generator, the box on the right and the box on the left are simultaneously going to flash red or green lights depending on whether I'm entangling red or green lights. You follow me so far?
Okay.
This entanglement of the red and green light and the red and green light does not have a distance. This box on the right could be a million billion miles away. It wouldn't matter. It would instantaneously respond to that. And that's what Einstein called the spooky phenomenon of the quantum field. Science has now proven this, and that's where we've heard of these teleportation experiments that have gone on in different laboratories, the military, the people in Sweden have done it, where they have proven this to be a fact. And I'm not going to go into this as a fact. Now, with entanglement, that also mixes with consciousness because we're observing this phenomenon of this instantaneous lighting of these two lights. That moving into our consciousness immediately goes to another person. And, for example, when you have entanglement with another person, that person could be clear over in Europe, and that phone rings, and you know who's on that phone. That person's there. You are now working with what's called quantum entanglement. You follow me?
Yes.
It's making sense? I'm for doing a better job of explaining it now?
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
When you make your prediction. Okay, and I was checking this out. There was a bunch of predictions just before 9/11, where people were having these dreams because the event was going to happen, but it hadn't happened yet. Okay, now this is entanglement, but entanglement doesn't reference a timeline as we know it. Okay, there is no time in entanglement. So therefore, time is only effective in entanglement, you know, like this red, these two boxes, in our dimension, you know, which we call terra firma, this place where we live. But there are other dimensions. There are other parallel universes. And in a parallel universe, the 9/11 could occur before it occurred here, and therefore a premonition would come back because entanglement crosses the time barrier. That's where teleportation starts to come in. It crosses the time barrier.
Okay.
Now, with the projector, what I have found is if you notice the projector, when you look at it, it has two holes in it, right, versus the receptor having one. When your electrons on your body go into, in a cloud, in a wave, into one of those holes, it simultaneously transmits it into the other hole. One of those holes is sending energy back into your aura field, and the other one is sending it to what you're entangled to. That's why it has that infinity look to the front, and that's what that split is all about. And that's the focal point. Now, the next thing about entanglement, you know, you have a standalone projector, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, when you shoot the light into a crystal, and this is bona fide science, when you shoot the red laser into a crystal, like a, you know, your master crystal or whatever, you ever notice there's a red haze on top of it?
Yes.
Okay, that red haze, if you look at it closely, it's not just red, it's all seven colors in there. That effect of that light, that laser, that coherent beam hitting that crystal, which is nonlinear in structure, has created an entanglement, which is now that red fuzz. I used to say that's the astral plane because that's a doorway. That red fuzz that you see around it are entangled photons. When you take that same energy and shoot it back into one of your projectors, you know, one of the gemstones on one of the projectors,
yeah,
and then you wear your projector, you now have opened up the doorway to many, many, many entanglements. And therefore, if you concentrate on something you want to happen, it already happens. It happens immediately, and it happens on multi-level dimensions. And that's kind of what I wanted to explain. If you want to change the gold prices, just you, you can do it. And I think you should bring them down now, and I'm going to work with you on this, so that we can buy some of this stuff and then let them go back up. Because with this technology, I'm going to explain it a lot more in my book and a lot more in your newsletter, a whole lot more than this. But I just wanted to give you something to think about, and the readers and the listeners out there, something to think about how this affects them. This entanglement thing is going to get big. It's going to be a buzzword just like hologram and quantum. And I've said this before, when I make these predictions about science, they usually come true like your predictions on everything else do.
Well, I think one of the fantastic things about studying anything that has to do with extraterrestrials or actually the entire field of ufology altogether is that what we're doing is really studying the future. If you look at how either propulsion systems on disks or the blue beams that come out of them, I mean, this is all stuff we now have Blu-ray lasers that absorb millions of times more information than red beam lasers. We have, you know, they're talking about ion power now, and I mean, we're looking into the future when we actually study this phenomenon. So it's fantastic that, I mean, you and I have known each other since I was really young. So.
Yeah, you were a disc jockey when I met you. 14-year-old.
College, actually. So I mean, further back than that. So
yeah.
So the idea is that your study of this and your analysis and unraveling this is so much of the study of metaphysics and so much of the study of ufology and the mystic and the paranormal is a study of the future. The scientist is constantly clawing and scraping his way up the mountain only to find the Dalai Lama and the mystic on the top of the mountain serving tea, as they say.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's one of those things where, you know, they are saying, what kept you?
Yeah.
And that's the real challenge between the Eastern and Western mind is that to the Western mind, we only accept as true that which we can either quantify or measure with our five senses or that which we can quantify and measure with machines and equipment to independently verify what we're seeing with our five senses. So our scope and understanding and knowledge of the universe is only as great as either our perceptions or the machines that we can build to measure the universe. And because the universe is, in fact, infinite, and we are, in fact, infinite, if you go into Eastern thought and the Eastern mind, we seem to have exchanged knowing for understanding. And, you know, understanding is sort of like you're standing underneath something and whatever it is going to crush you eventually.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
I agree with that.
I think that was the apple in the garden that Eve bit, the knowledge of the tree of good and evil. I think that the serpent representing the limbic system and the amygdala in the brain was responsible for separating and dividing the male and female, the east and west, the right and left sides of the brain, psychologically speaking. And actually, it was a natural outgrowth, I think, of the evolution of the species. That those two areas had to go to separate corners, so to speak. But that this year is going to be about the east and the west beginning to reconcile each other. That knowing and knowledge, maybe, or I guess that's the best way to put it. There's a simple knowing that came when we were in a state of grace, if you will, and the fall from grace, which was the introduction of fear and anger and hate and all those things that unfortunately are introduced by the limbic system and the reptilian brain, which is why so many people are saying, well, you know, if the reptilians or reptilian extraterrestrials are responsible for what's going on now, well, you can actually say the reptilian within ourselves.
Exactly.
Is what is responsible for what's going on now, because
yeah.
The reptilian within us that triggers the fight or flight reflexes, all the fear, and fear leads to anger, and anger leads to hate, and hate leads to the dark side of the force, said Master Yoda, is what's kind of splitting us up. And this year is going to see a very harsh year of traumas, of you're already seeing the massive divisions between East and West. You're already looking at how the United States and England, interestingly enough, attack Iraq together, that creates the split between East and West. And if you actually look at it that way, then everybody this year should be actually looking very closely at what's going to happen in Germany at the very heart of the European Union and Italy, because Germany and Italy, actually, because they're in they're really kind of the crossroads point, such as Marco Polo going to the east, if you will. They're at the crossroads point between the east and the west, and they really represent the hippocampus of the brain. And the hippocampus is actually transmitting information back and forth from the right and left sides of the brain. So if you actually look at the entire planet as a brain, with all of us as being, let's say, you know, neurons inside that brain, then you're going to see the vibratory frequency from the east actually beginning to rebalance itself and re-justify. And of course, the eastern part of the brain, or the right-hand side of the brain, as we call it, is the part of the brain that exists in outside of time and space, that exists in the quantum time that you're talking about. It's the part of the brain that's actually activated by psilocybin, by mushrooms, by LSD, that ayahuasca, that triggers these old and or ancient memories, but also is part of the brain that seems to not exist in linear time. It seems to, it's the part of the brain we access when we use remote viewing, as we said, the feminine aspect of the brain that seems to know everything, past, present, and future, has to figure out a way to communicate with the masculine part of the brain, the left-hand side of the brain. And the only way that it can really communicate is through symbols and archetypes and art, through music, through painting, through music being a harmonic frequency of vibration, which actually links the entire human race together, because it's accepted by a universal subconscious. It has a universal effect on us all. And that's this whole next year. It's the fascinating part about this is that in studying the Mayans and the Aztecs and then linking it in with everything that you're saying, we're in the last week of the Mayan calendar. We're from 1999 through 2012 or so are the last 7 days where each year represents a day, and then each year represents a night. So we've just, as of November 19th, we've actually moved into what's called the fifth night on the Mayan calendar. And this fifth night is the year of Armageddon. It means a reconciling between the East and the West. And the massive concentration of the pulse of this energy from the East, I kid you not, in the Mayan calendar, is from August 10th to August 31st of 2008, yeah, which of course is when the Olympics are being held in Beijing, China.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a, and it may be that because so much of the world is just going to be ripping itself apart, that who knows, maybe the demonstrations, or maybe religious freedom, or maybe an entire new political and or economic system is going to start to come out of China that'll start to rebalance this energy.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see where that's going to happen. By the way, tell people, you're also a well-known remote viewer, and you, which is also entanglement, the viewer with the object to be viewed. So tell people a little bit about your remote viewing, because I know you do that a lot, and you teach classes in it too, right?
That's a whole other thing. I was kind of one of the pioneers of a lot of the techniques early on. Remote viewing is just a fancy term for actually viewing things that are remote from you in time and space. And it's it got popular because Russell Targ and Hal Puthoff and Ingo Swann and the whole gang at Stanford University in the early 70s were working with Uri Geller, and the military actually wanted a series of protocols that would allow them to take military individuals that have the psychic abilities of a bag of hammers, basically, and try to teach them to view targets in the past or either in the past or future or present, again, remote from them in time and space. And that it became glamorous, if you will. I mean, I started doing remote viewing. I was introduced to it in the summer of 1976, and then started honing it in the early 80s when I met Elizabeth Targ, who was Russell's daughter, and Elizabeth and I were good friends for many, many years and dated for a while, and we started coming up with basically ways to use psychic abilities to predict roulette wheels initially. And and I took a lot of my Eastern training when I was in Nepal and in India, and applied it to a lot of the Western science of remote viewing. Remote viewing, once again, has to do with just taking an object or a concealed object, and it's just a training method, if you will, that allows one to actually see these objects and move. I mean, I could say to you, Fred, if I put you with a remote viewing training, I could say, well, let's take a look at, I don't know, the death of Princess Diana, or the sinking of the Titanic, or, you know, let's go take a look at some kind of point in the future. Although I have noticed that remote viewers have no track record whatsoever when it comes to actually predicting the future. I seem to be the only one that has any prescience whatsoever in predicting future events.
But you're out on the street more, and you got more energy. You're out, you know, quantifying all kinds of events because you're traveling all over the world all the time.
Well, I'm just
that makes
well,
a difference, I think.
Well, that too, and it's just most remote viewers are just I'm not sure what they're doing with it, but it's my concern is the planet, and I use a lot of what I call cartomancy, which is actually working with maps to predict earthquakes and hurricanes and weather catastrophes and disasters and what have you, and at the same time using that to predict the stock market and trends on the stock market and gold and silver and very specific stocks and also looking for knowing psychically and intuitively what the next trend is going to be, looking for companies that are actually going to fuel that trend. For example, we're in right now from 2004 to 2034, the progressed sun of the United States is going through a 30-year Pisces period. So, just in brief, and I know we've got a very short time to talk about this, but
about half an hour, about 25 minutes.
All right,
I
want to get back into how this all relates to the quantum stuff that you're talking about, and how this all kind of relates to that, and ask you a couple of questions about that. Just in brief, if in 1945 I was to tell you that the United States was entering a golden age, and to invest in the automotive industry, and to invest in Detroit, and factories and heavy industry, and that the United States was going to set the world up like a business, and to invest in financial institutions and things like that, you'd be a multi-billionaire today, because the United States went through a 30-year Capricorn period from 1945 to 1974. And again, the United States set up Germany, set up Japan, set the entire world up as a business, and it led to what is arguably the golden age of American culture. We had more kids and rock and roll and of course Elvis Presley being the king. Of course, he was January 8th. He was a Capricorn and he became the king of the Capricorn age. So all these interesting things happened through that period of time. Nixon at the end, also a Capricorn at the end of the Capricorn age. It's very, very interesting that Nixon leaves office in 1974 at the very end of the 30-year progression of Capricorn. And then in 1974, if I was to tell you that the whole next phase was going to be computers, and the whole next phase was going to be remote transmission of energy through the air and satellites beaming television through space and wireless communication and telecommunicators like you see on communications devices like you see on Star Trek. And if I said just to invest in anything that has to do with that, again, you'd be a multi-billionaire. And, of course, the progressed son of the United States moved into Aquarius in 1974, about 2 weeks before Microsoft was actually founded. And that lasted until 2004. So from 2004 to 2034, we go through now the age of Pisces, the progressed son of Pisces. So what does Pisces bring? Pisces is water, is hands and feet, it's one of the ultimate feminine signs in the zodiac. It is health care. It is the planet Neptune is ruled by Pisces, which is the planet of illusion, but also is the planet of the dream state and dreams actually physically becoming real things. So it's also, if you look at the entire Piscean age, the last 2,000 years, I would say probably religious fundamentalism and religious violence and holy wars have been really been probably what has shaped more of the last 2,000 year age than anything else, and you're going to see a concentration of that now.
The focal point.
Yeah, the focal points, and I do think that within the next year we're going to see atomic weapons used in anger at some point, either between the United States and Iran or Iran versus Israel and or Pakistan and India. And these have been things that I've been... The Pakistan and India deal was something I've been talking about since 1994.
Oh, I know. I've heard a lot of it from you, yeah.
Right. When I said that in 1994 I'd made the prediction... In 94 I said that in 2001 that we would have an attack by Arab terrorist states upon the United States, that this would actually then result in wars in Iraq and Iran, but that World War III would begin when Pakistan attacks India with nuclear weapons. And, of course, in 94... I mean, monkeys typing Shakespeare had as much chance of happening as the Pakistanis developing an atomic bomb. And, of course, not only has that happened, but Clinton sent a cruise missile into Pakistan that didn't explode in 98. So now they've got cruise missile technology and missile technology.
Yeah,
so
that's pretty good. Yeah,
that's what happened. Yeah, so now they've got this. So they have the weapons to be able to do it. And as you're seeing things heat up, here's an interesting prediction for you. I mean, I think that the Army is actually going to turn against Musharraf, because Musharraf's our guy. The CIA basically put him in there. The minute the Pakistanis got the bomb,
right,
the U.S. went in there, and Musharraf just took over. And because we were not going to allow a radical Muslim nation state to run around with not only nuclear weapons but missile technology along with nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
So it'll be very interesting to see what happens between, not interesting, I think it's going to be tragic, what happens between Pakistan and India. But getting back to everything else we're talking about, and let me ask you a question about this. A lot of what I've been doing recently is I've been working on something that I call quantum enlightenment dynamics, and the idea of the quantum field, and this is, and let me throw this to you. I mean, Einstein worked on a unified field theory for many years and supposedly didn't complete it.
Right.
They claim that Tesla did, but either died or was removed by the government. There are people who claim to have seen Tesla well into the 50s and 60s, that he maybe didn't die in 1943, although he looked pretty sick from the photos I saw.
Yeah, he was
in 1943 or so.
Well.
But the whole point of, and this is what's really just rattling people, is that Einstein's special theory of relativity and a lot of Einstein's theories are completely incompatible and anathema to what's now being called quantum field theory. And the other real challenge here being is that there is no unified field theory and will never be a unified field theory amongst modern-day scientists, because they do not actually recognize consciousness as a third force of nature.
Yeah, well, you know, it's actually the fifth force, because they strong nuclear force,
right?
Nuclear force, gravity, and magnetism. That's what they see, consciousness. There's a few of them that are starting to wake up now. I'm going to try to get them here on the show and communicate with them. But there are a few starting to wake up now. And Einstein did, in his latter work, when he was working with Rosen, did say there was a possibility that he was wrong. And
right.
He at least knew, he kind of predicted his own fate.
Well, there were some people that think that Einstein finished the unified field and it was on his desk somewhere, and, you know, he died
and
he finished
it. He wasn't quite there yet. And in the last really hot dog bunch of scientists that are, you know, Bohm and Bohr and all those guys, and Erwin Schrödinger, they all were born in the last, you know, just before 1900. There was like a crop of them that came in 15 years before 1900. So these guys, so now the next generation is taking over, you know, and that's kind of where we're at with all of this. It's real interesting. And so anyway, now let's switch over. You're up there. I just want to say Sean used to go out to Area 51 and give tours, and Sean and I went to Dulce a few times and filmed aliens and blah blah blah. But he's up in Sedona, Arizona, and you're up there with some shamans tonight, right?
Well, what we're doing is that here's what's the most interesting thing right now.
Yeah.
November 19th of 2007 through November 12th of 2008.
Right.
It's kind of hard to explain. There's two calendars that we're dealing with right now. There's a fantastic book, and there's a big debate going on right now too between John Major Jenkins, who wrote Mayan Cosmogenesis, and who I interviewed on my radio show about 10 years or so ago. And
by the way, you're going to start a podcast too, right?
Oh, I don't know, maybe.
Come on,
you're so much better at it than I am, Fred. So I think I'll
go ahead.
I think we need Fred Bell to take over the airwaves now.
Okay, go ahead.
But in another book that I highly, highly recommend to everybody out there, which is called The Mayan Calendar and Transformation of Human Consciousness, and it's by Dr. Carl Johan Kalaman, and I've become a big fan of Dr. Kalaman's just recently. And here's the most interesting thing for me, is that there's a couple of interesting dates, and let me give your audience some very fascinating dates of things that are going on out there. There's two calendars. There's an Aztec calendar, which is actually based on the pyramid of Teotihuacan, which was studied by Montezuma. And Montezuma was not only a student of this, which I think also shows us that there's a good possibility that maybe the Mayan monolithic structures, the pyramids of Chichen Itza and the Great Pyramid of Teotihuacan, which was an Aztec structure, I think there's a body of evidence that shows that these structures might, in fact, predate the Mayans and the Aztecs, because Montezuma was as mystified as anybody as by a pyramid that was sitting in his own backyard. But here's the bottom line of this whole thing. The bottom line is that the Aztec calendar runs from January of 1999, the last week of what they call the galactic week of this calendar, runs from January 99 to approximately October of 2011, whereas Major Jenkins talks about the Mayan calendar, and that, of course, ends with the famous date of December 21st of 2012. So the Aztec calendar ending on October 28th, 2011, which I think is interesting because that's Hillary Clinton's birthday, strangely enough, is very interesting because he talks about, I'll just try to get this all out very quickly, that there's what they call a national, a planetary, and a galactic week. A national week, each day in the national week is about 200 years or so. Each day in the planetary week is about 20 years. And a day in the galactic week is approximately 1 year. So everything's boiling down for all of these calendars, both the national, the planetary, and the galactic calendars, all come to this crashing end again in 2012. Interesting enough, between 2011 and 2012. There is another harmonic convergence, which is coming up. And I've been trying to get this out there to people. And actually, Fred, you know probably a lot more famous people than I do. I mean, I know you know Wesley and, you know, the gangs out there and people in the music business and all this, but I've been trying to get this date out there to everybody that May 27th, 28th, and 29th of 2010 is the next harmonic convergence. And the last harmonic convergence, which was August 17th, 18th, and 19th of 1987, was such a giant shift in consciousness. It was that the Mayan calendar said if 144,000 people could greet the dawn in peace at that period of time, that all of the disasters and all of the terror on the planet would be pulled down by a factor of 10. Well, now we've got one last chance here to actually get the entire world to come together for the capstone of that energy from 1987 to all culminate in 2010. And since we've now got only about 2 years to get this done, you know, I was certainly hoping that we could get some really conscious people like Sting and Bono and some of these socially conscious music groups out there.
Yeah, I know Sting, and I don't know Bono that well, but he recorded one of his albums in one of my pyramid systems.
Well, I if we could get any of these guys to start talking about the next harmonic convergence and maybe start linking all of the chakra points of the planet together to link the root chakra of Lhasa, the prostate ovarian chakra of Cairo, Egypt, the Great Pyramid, the solar plexus, which is Stonehenge, the heart chakra, which is Machu Picchu, the throat chakra, which is downtown Los Angeles, and the third eye, which is Osaka, Japan, then we actually then all come together as a human race.
Well, I know I'm sort of pushing you this into this, but even in your newsletter, this is where I think you and I can do something with this quantum entanglement, and it's a matter of you educating people how to use this power that we all have and focus it. And with the same skills that you taught your remote viewing, I think once you and I have had a private session, hopefully next Thursday we can talk about this when I see you, we can get into this, and I think I can show you some shortcuts. And in the shortcuts, we can draw Sting in and all these guys in a heartbeat. We'll bring them right in.
Well,
I haven't focused on that, but we can do that, and that's not a problem.
Well, let's pull them in. I mean, what I'm doing now with the quantum enlightenment stuff is that I'm now learning.
Yeah.
That the way I see it, and this is what I need a scientific explanation for, because the way I see it is that I look at the quantum field very much like they do in the Matrix films. Whereas if you watch, Keanu Reeves
there's a Matrix equation in that right now. Go ahead.
Well, if you look at what happens between Neo and Morpheus, the characters, in the Matrix, and of course after Neo swallows the red pill and the machines basically pop him out of the Matrix because a conscious individual acts as a virus within the Matrix, which is why the machines eventually set him free.
Right.
That once he understands that it's not about choice, of course, that's the Oracle. Most people don't understand that the Oracle is the real villain of the piece because it figures out that you can keep people enslaved by making them think that they have choices when it's never about choice. It's always about control. That Morpheus says, takes him into a huge white space.
Right.
And he says, this is the construct. And within the construct is where they can run all their battle simulations and all these other things. And at the very end, when Neo has to go save Morpheus, and he says, guns, lots of guns, and these big racks of guns appear. Part of what I'm learning now, and I'm doing this with healing,
right,
is that when I lay hands on people and I do a two-point process, and this has a lot to do with my association with Dr. Richard Bartlett. I went out to Hawaii, and I took about a 10-day course out there with Richard, because Richard's been using this through his matrix energetics processes, is that the body seems to have a steering mechanism to it, and the DNA itself has a process that can write itself if you can actually give it the proper commands and or orders. Because our biology becomes our biography, I'm sorry, our story, our rackets, our tale of woe, if you will, our biography becomes our biology. And
now, that's true. That's where we can step out of that now. That's the beauty of it. There's a way of stepping out of it. That's very true. That gave us our grounding, our DNA, basically.
Well, not only does our biography become our biology, but I'm noticing that we are the visible ends of karmic ropes that actually stretch back through billions of years. I mean, the fantastic thing is that, and I think it's very empowering, is that we are all biologically related to each other. We are actually chemically related to the Earth, and we are atomically related to the rest of the universe. Therefore, there's a couple of interesting things. Science has proven that all is one, because everything is all directly interconnected and everything comes from everything else.
Right.
Science has proven that there is eternal life, because energy cannot be created or destroyed. Therefore, you as an energy continue to focus and process, and I think continue to evolve. The only thing, I think in the world of spirit, we actually go towards a more organized state. We're actually trying to achieve a higher perfected state, whereas in the field of matter, the second law of thermodynamics takes over, where we go to a disorganized or decaying state. And the more spirit interacts with matter, the more we can actually stop and or slow the decay.
Exactly, and that's what I was coming from when I was talking about the where the photons grounding us in dark energy.
Well, but here's the trick. The trick is that if you have three forces in the universe, if you've got the masculine, which is the father force, the feminine, which is the mother force, if everything comes from the void, the understanding of the Tibetan Manitavara is that the night comes first, that you have, in essence, a magnetic black void, which is then impinged upon, literally raped, if you will, by the red electric magnetism of the masculine God force, which then the positive and the negative forces, the electric and the magnetic, then form a third force that the Hebrews call the Da'at force, or the sun, or Shiva, and this becomes the child force, or the impingement of personality upon matter. And one of the things that I'm finding is that when I do my healings, I'm laying hands on people, I simply push their body slightly, testing them to go back to an age in which they've actually received an injury, very much like going through a garden hose where the water's not coming out at the end and you're going down the hose, and once you find the kink in the hose, you unkink the hose so that the water of spirit can actually flow out the other end of the hose. I put my hands on these people and I simply say, okay, 44, 43, 42, 40, 37, 38, or 38, 37, and I get to the point where the damage occurred, suddenly the body begins to go limp, and I say, okay, we're going to go back to before that point in time, reset the quantum clock, which is on the right side of the brain, erase that karma. Actually, Christianity is a fantastic construct for that, because if you figure Jesus paid for everybody's sins, and, you know, if he picked up the check for the whole table, you ask somebody, well, what's your religious construct? And if they're Christian, you say, well, what do you have a problem believing that you're washed in the blood of Christ? And all right, here you go, gouge. And their whole body, just these people go limp, they pass out, I have to have people catch them. It's one of those, I mean, it's something that you see on religious Christian channels all the time, because the fundamentalists, or the spiritualists, or the charismatics has kind of taken it over. But in our metaphysical world, what we're doing is we're resetting that clock, going back before the injury, forgiving their sin, if you will, or getting them right with their agreements with the universe. It overwhelms the conscious mind, and they just simply pass out, and the DNA resets, because we're commanding the quantum field to go back to a space and time and recreate itself along another path.
Well, that's right. That's what the hologram does. You know, the hologram takes us out of time. It's timeless. That's the beauty of it.
But the trick is that to the trick really here, Fred. If you want to perform magic, and the actual definition of true magic, not just Chris Angel crappy, you know, tricky magic,
Chris Angel,
but the actual definition of magic is taking that which you think and making that what you think physical reality.
Exactly.
And
that's what we're all about now.
But that's what the next 30 years is. Pisces is the dream state becoming real. So everything that you and I are talking about, the quantum enlightenment dynamics that I'm working on, the matrix energetic stuff of Dr. Richard Bartlett, the fact that you've come up with a science and a technology using the amazing nuclear receptor, using the RNA DNA projectors.
That's focusing tools.
All have to do with, and what is magic? Magic is a series of chants and or, you know, I don't know if you have to jump around a fire or beat a drum or whatever to allow you to laser and focus your energy in order to apply intent. And, you know, what I use is a lot of angelic force. Because everybody's familiar. Every culture, by the way, every culture has angels as their construct.
Oh, yeah.
Every culture.
We got them here, too.
Whether or not it's Christian culture, we have angels. In Muslim and Judaic culture, they have angels. You go to India, they have divas. It's the same thing. All of us have these spiritual helper spirits that are simply waiting for us to command them. And the cool thing is with the healing, I don't have to know how the body even works. I don't have to know how the computer works.
No, all you have to do is quantify it, and it's automatic.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I got to bring something up before we kick you off the air and we get
right.
kicked off. You're a USC graduate, and the USC at the beginning of the year wasn't doing so well, and I heard you've been doing a little healing on the players over there.
Oh, I can't really talk about it much, but it's
a little bit.
It's been a rare opportunity that I've gotten to interact with some of the kids there. And do some great things for them. I'm sorry, I just didn't get brought in sooner. It's a very difficult thing because when you interact with the whole football world, anything that has to do with what we do, you know, obviously gets poo-pooed and people think it's all witchcraft or something stupid.
Yeah, I think you're bringing credibility to it, though.
Well, it's really just a hyper applied form of kinesiology,
right?
Of sports kinesiology, and at the same time, using what we call neuro-linguistic programming as well to actually slow down the time field so that when the ball actually leaves the quarterback's hands, you put a module inside the kid's head, in other words, a thought form, so that when you actually put this in, the ball actually gets bigger and bigger and bigger as it comes towards them. Time begins to slow down, which actually then helps improve their performance. So it's all
putting them in the zone.
You know, getting in the zone, exactly. It's all stuff that's been out there. Coaches, very advanced, fantastic coaches like Pete Carroll, have used books like Tim Galway's Book of Inner Tennis, which has been around since 1977. You know, Pete Carroll also has a master's degree in philosophy. He did a lot of training at the Esalen Institute in the 70s. You know, so he's a very, very advanced, you know, very, very powerful spiritual man. And he's finally managed to take his positivity and his spirit and his power and apply this to sports. And he is now currently with a record of like 0.852 or something, you know, I mean, the winningest active coach in college football, and you know, we're right on the precipice of six consecutive, you know, Pac-10 titles. I mean, breaking all the record books here because he's managed to apply the things that you and I talk about to the realm of sports and to, in essence, what are the best athletes in the country.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. And I'm not now going to jump you again. I know you did some movies. Are you working on any new films? I know you did that Joe Killionaire film.
I did Joe Killionaire a couple of years back. Of course, we actually also shot Prophecy of the Pyramids, which wound up going nowhere, as I'm sure you know. The guy who was head of the production company ran, you know, just decided it was easier to keep all the money than actually produce stuff. So
yeah, that was a sad story.
So I'm meeting with some people next week. My book, Black Seraph, is actually doing very well.
Yeah, how's that book? Tell us about your book. Everybody needs to buy that book. Go to SeanDavidMorton.com and buy it, right?
Well, it's also Amazon.com. The book is called Black Seraph. It's a fantastic action-adventure novel about spies inside the Vatican. It's basically the Jesuits as probably the most badass intelligence agency on the planet. So it's sort of like James Bond meets and Die Another Day kind of meets...
When's that going to be a movie?
Well, I actually have the screenplay going, and you know, we're talking to Pierce Brosnan about it. And I'm actually working on the sequel to Black Seraph now, which is called Veil of the Antichrist to Pray at Cordoba, and it's our character Father Lindquist, who is a Jesuit spy for the Vatican, is actually becoming a very popular character, and there's a lot of people that want to see sequels to the book. So I finished the rough draft of the Veil of the Antichrist book, and I'm actually just doing the polish on it now. So we should have that out by the beginning of the year.
I don't mean to put you through all these hoops, but I want to have you back on as a regular guest. And also, you know, I want people to know what you do. You do about everything.
Well,
you know?
Let me also mention one other thing, too, and we're hoping to get some pretty big people, too. We've got a major trip going to Peru in February, and actually February 13th through March 1st, we're going down because there's a total lunar eclipse. It's a very, very important moon in the Mayan calendar. And we've got Dr. Susan Shumsky, who wrote Divine Revelations, Spiritual Street Smarts. She's written about 6 major best-selling books. We're also meeting up with a gentleman by the name of Malkuth, who is a fantastic Mayan shaman and a very famous author and astronomer and astrologer down in South America. And for the first time, actually, it's been almost impossible to get to because before this, there's only been like a bunkhouse that sleeps about 16 people or so, but just in the last year, they've actually built a hotel on Easter Island.
Wow.
So when we come back, we're going down to Lima, then we go up to Cuzco, then we're going to go to Cuzco, go to Machu Picchu, do a rafting trip down the Urubamba River, and then on the way back, we're going to spend actually 3 days. You go to Santiago, and then we're actually going to fly out and actually spend 3 days actually with the monuments on Easter Island. So that's a trip that's coming up February 13th through March 1st, and of course you can also check the website for that. Maybe we could actually con Dr. Fred Bellin to go in with us too.
We'll work. That's a long trip for me, you know.
Well,
I don't mind doing it, but I got the birds and blah blah blah.
Oh yeah, of course. Well, you've got to fly down
and join one of the events and come back.
Yeah, you've got the doctor.
We have a jet at our disposal. I forgot to tell you, so we can come down in that.
Well, la di da. Maybe we can fly some big celebrities down there in the jet.
Yeah, well, we could possibly do that. We're getting in that. We're it's another story, but yeah, we're getting a private ship now to get around in, and we're going to use the heck out of it actually.
A private ship?
Well, no, it's a Learjet.
Yeah, I wish I one of the Andromedas.
It's a lot quicker than, I'll tell you, when you fly around this thing, it's a lot quicker than the commercial, and we can go right where we want, you know.
Oh, well, that would be nice. Well, maybe we can...
We've been with our
ambassador passports for the Dominion of Melchizedek, maybe we can make that our country's plane, huh?
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good. So anyway,
how much time we have left?
We're running out of time. I got about a minute.
Oh.
How do you buy your book? Go to your Sean David Morton?
You can go to SeanDavidMorton.com. It's up there on the website, or it's just easy. Go to Amazon.com, and you can actually type in
your name.
Either Sean David Morton, or the book is called Black Seraph.
Yeah.
And Amazon.com would be the way to do it. You know, get those numbers up there, and it's doing very well, and actually it's going into its second printing now.
Wow.
And it's been a big bestseller, so book two is on its way.
That's excellent. Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
You deserve it. All right, I gotta run out of here. I wish I could stay longer.
All right, Uncle Fred, me too.
And to
like I said, let's just do it again sometime real soon.
Yeah, we'll do it. When are you coming back to L.A.?
I will be back on Sunday, like everybody else.
Okay. Like everybody else, I'll have your article done for you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, that was Sean David Morton from SeanDavidMorton.com and Delphi Associates, which puts out a newsletter. He's a regular on the George Norrie Show. He's on there almost all the time, and hopefully he'll become a regular here. I'm running out of town. This has been Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, the day after Thanksgiving, year 2007. Thank you, thank you, thank you for making this a very popular show. It's a little stormy out there, but I'm going.